This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Girls on Porn. I'm Rachel.
I'm Laura.
And we love porn.
This is our porn review podcast.
We talk about what we love and we roast what we hate.
Helping you find hot, ethical, just plain better porn for your spank bank.
And we're looking at everything.
Today we are joined by a very special guest. Welcome to Margaret Cho.
Yay!
Hi. Hi.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're such big fans.
I'm so excited. Thank you.
Margaret Cho is a 5-time Emmy and Grammy nominated comedian, in case you didn't know. She was most recently seen as a guest star in Law & Order SVU and The Masked Singer. Margaret was named one of the 50 best stand-ups of all time by Rolling Stone, and she has traveled worldwide for over 2 years with her Fresh Off the Bloat tour. She's the host of the aptly named Margaret Cho podcast, which is on Irios, and new episodes come out on Tuesdays. And finally, she's a sex-positive babe and advocate for queer rights and anti-bullying. Margaret, what a perfect fit for you to be on the show.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you.
So first and foremost, do you watch porn?
Have you ever watched porn? Was this your first time?
Have you heard of porn?
Yeah. I do. I watch a variety of it. I do love, I love vintage porn. Oh. I love, Wee Magazine is kind of my latest obsession, which is it was a European porn, not porn, it's sort of softcore porn magazine that was bought by, I think, Playboy in the 70s at some point. And then, so now I've been buying up old issues of it, and I buy it off of closeted men who were dads in the 70s who, like, bought it to put on, you know, put their, like, wives at ease. And so they're like pristine issues that have never been opened and never been touched. And I buy them from guys named Bruce and Scotty. And they've like
from
still
Palm
got
Springs.
The subscription cards inside intact.
Oh my
and,
God.
Wow.
They're really beautiful. They're like so funny. And they always have like these like little like ads for like cocaine spoons.
Oh,
and,
oh
wow.
satin sheets and Spanish fly and stuff like that. But it's like all of, you know, I love pubes and I love the kind of like soft focus photography that's kind of, it sort of emulates Gibson girls, like the big poofy hair and like that 70s Victoriana, like the 70s, they had this thing about they wanted to look like the Victorians also. And
the
do
curls.
That kind of weird like... yeah, Gibson girl hair, but like what porn might have looked like at the turn of the century or before.
Mm. Lots of lace, you know?
So it's like double layer vintage. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like double layer vintage. They also like the 1930s and the like sort of 1940s. So I do love, I like vintage porn. I like vintage European porn. I like vintage lesbian European porn, so like 70s and 1980s, everybody looks like ABBA, kind of.
Yeah. Like very blunt haircuts and like little petite girls with like cool haircuts, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Nordic.
Yeah, and everybody has, it's sort of before plastic surgery, so you had very real bodies, you know, you had very... like a very big sense of like people were getting into porn in a way that they really did like sex. So there was a porn star named Mary Millington. Mm. There's a documentary about her on Hulu. And she was like 4'11" or something. And she was sort of like this pint size like princess. And she looked very upscale, but she was very into sex. And so she was sort of like their answer to, I guess, Marilyn Chambers or whatever.
Yeah.
And so she was a very high in demand porn star. And she was really, really popular, and I really like her because she seemed very, very into it too. Like she was very excited by the intensity of the sex, and so I love that kind of era of porn star. I like the opening of Misty Beethoven and Jamie Gillis, and like the early sort of thing where you would go to like a porn theater with your boyfriend or girlfriend and watch a big production movie.
Yeah. Like
very
the golden age of porn.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of exploitation and of course a lot of horrible stories that come out of that period.
Yeah,
but at the same time, like I like the drama and the thought of like, oh, well, there was a time where this might have been something, you know, it was sort of before AIDS, before like the real scourge of like herpes or whatever we think of as STDs, and a time of like where sexual like emancipation could have been in our grasp.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You know, well, we had the pill and we had this idea that maybe we could have sort of the equality of the sexes. We could have a kind of, it was in our reach in a way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, really the peak of the first wave of the sexual revolution, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
At least here.
Yeah. It was hopeful, you know.
Yeah, it was hopeful.
Yeah. It was a hopeful time. Yeah.
Pre-plague.
So like I like that idea. So that to me is a kind of like thing of like, and I could see like my parents kind of coming to the edge of that. Like I could see like this thing of this awakening happening. And we were in San Francisco, and I could sort of witness part of that happening.
Yeah.
So I idealized that time, and I think, well, I wish that – I don't know if I wish I was around then, because I know there was a lot of complexity, but that's why I like all the porn of that era, and so I collect a lot of it. But it's the funniest thing to get these giant boxes from, like, Etsy of, like, you know, porn that's, like, untouched from – like 40 Christine. Years ago,
right.
Like 48 years ago, you know, like July 1973, a magazine that has not been opened.
Wow.
I have a couple of vintage Playboys, but they've definitely like seen some, like there's like notes on the outside of some of them where like someone's like writing timestamps for some reason. Like I don't have anything pristine. Mm. I'm jealous of that, but I feel you on the aesthetic.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's really touching too. I have a couple of really hardcore magazines. There's my friend turned me on to this series called Puritan, which is the other side, which is actually like hardcore porn. That's like it has been touched a little bit, but those are
it's printed.
But those it's printed, and
Got
it's
it.
Probably from like 1980. 988
okay.
And so you had like early websites in there, like early kind of very early
angelfire.com
internet ads.
/ dildo.
And the printing
check
is very like
MySpace.
It's off, and it's very it's very the spines are really weak, so the pages fall out easily. So that kind of stuff is, it's fragile, but but you know that it hasn't been worked over that much because all of it would have fallen out already.
Yeah. Wait, can I go back? You mentioned your parents being on like the edge of this sexual moment. Would you say they were progressive and you were kind of aware of their sex lives at all?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. A little bit. Well, they were, they owned a gay bookstore in San Francisco in the 70s. So
amazing.
They owned a gay, but bought a gay bookstore in 1977.
Wow. Hmm.
So they had they were at the beginnings Harvey Milk's political career.
Right. Mm.
They had employees who were working with Harvey Milk and marching with him. They were there for his assassination, wow. like around his memorial yeah. and around that political movement.
Yeah.
And so they were there like they were helping Ed Hardy, who's a tattooist, sell his early tattoo time books and modern primitives books in the early 80s, mid 80s.
Wow.
So they were like around that kind of, they weren't kind of, they'd escaped like Korea in the 60s. And so they were in this period where they didn't have to behave anymore.
Mm.
So they were very much like kind of, in this like fleeing mentality where they didn't have to be like so controlled in their behavior. And so they smoked pot. They were in San Francisco and
yeah,
they definitely were acting up.
Yeah.
And I don't know like the details.
That's awesome. Cause you sometimes hear of like the opposite reaction of like
right.
folks immigrating from oppressive governments and then being very straight laced, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of awesome yeah. that they embraced that escapism and the sort of like right. different elements of revolution. That's really cool.
And how lucky to kind of grow up with like a freedom around and like no shame around like sexuality.
Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible. But it's also yeah. like this thing of like, you know, not really knowing, because they also would never necessarily share it or, you know, they still like, it's still like a mystery. Like, I don't really know. And they would never really share. I only know like kind of what I would see.
Okay.
You, you could never really, like, they still have that sort of wall of like, nothing's going on.
Right. Mm. Right.
You'd never really know. And they would never tell me, even now.
Mm.
They would never tell me. All I know is kind of like the sort of what I think happened. But I do know that like there is a very thin veil of like monogamy. Like I know that they all had affairs with each other, like all of the generation that came over
wow
with each other, like they're sort of class of like students of all the that generation of Koreans that came over, they all had affairs with each other. So we all sort of resemble each other, all like the kids. I'm not sure who our parents are entirely. I think my parents are my parents, but I'm not entirely sure. We're not entirely sure. And so like that's the kind of thing of like, there's a lot of the things that we're just never going to know.
Right.
Huh.
So.
I would be so curious.
I know.
But I guess if yeah. it's like sort of a tight-knit community, it's different than being right. like, I have to find my dad on the other side of the planet.
Yeah. I mean, just start passing out 23andMe yeah. kits, you know?
The mysteries are never going to be ever solved, but it is because that's the part of it that's like, they're going to retain like the secrecy of it because that's very Korean.
Sure. Totally.
That's the part of the culture they're going to keep up, the appearances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. But I know that they didn't play by the rules, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Was some of your first experiences with porn in your parents' like bookstore?
Yeah, because they had like a huge gay section.
Yeah.
Like that was very much like there was like a gay. So we had magazines that were like all of the gay porn magazines, like Blue Boy and Honcho, and like. So they were up there, then they were like with all like the Penthouse, and I don't think that we had Hustlers, but we had like Skin 2. Skin 2 was probably like later, like we had like the fetish magazines, which is like, yeah. I think is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
But we had like Skin 2 and we had like, I think we had like the trans magazines, which were... a lot of, and then I believe we had like equestrian ones too, like the
that's great.
Pony play ones.
Yeah.
Like we had like a bunch of the different sort of, but there was like, I know that there was a trans magazine and but we had a bunch of the different periodicals, and then we had Passport, which was one that was for admirers of Asian men. And it was kind of like, it was almost like a dating magazine for Asian men to put their pictures in so that white men could contact them. It was something
wow.
like that. So it was almost like a passport magazine. I wasn't
pre-internet.
Entirely sure.
Yeah.
It was pre-internet.
Yeah.
This is like 80s stuff. So it was kind of like almost like a a sort of a dating guide. And then we had the Bob Damrons, which were these big gay guys where it was sort of like these books that were places that were almost like pre gay book gay guides that were like places you could go where it was gay to be safe to go.
Yeah.
So it's like this isn't necessarily a gay bar, but it's cool. They're cool with it if right. you're gay.
You're gonna be safe. Yeah.
It's safe to go. And then it was like then it was more like this is a gay place. This is a gay place. So that kind of stuff. And then we had these like rolling racks or these like circular racks full of like gay romance novels.
Oh.
That would have like a boy with like a really shag haircut and like a tank top, and it would just say cobalt. And it would be like a drawing of a late teens or early 20s boy, the tank top, like a blue tank top right. in a parking lot.
Oh.
With his thumbs in his jeans with cutoffs.
Yeah.
And like a full moon.
What a fantasy. <That's>
Dreaming.
And it would just say cobalt. And it would just be like, you know, with very full lips.
Yeah.
And it would just be like this very crude drawing. And it was just like funny. But of course, the lesbian section was like very like overwrought of like all Jeanette Winterston. Like very sad. Like, you know, it's just like really like the lesbian section was always like really sad of like Billie Jean King and our bodies ourselves. And, like, it was like always like super
not
like
unfair.
Sad of like
very
or, like,
self-serious,
super serious or like vegan cooking or like just like, you know, like never like the lesbian section was always like wanting, because I think that the women that worked with my father were just like older and like super like it was like that era of like lesbian that was just very we had a lot of Andrea Dworkin and like that kind of like attitude of like very kind of puritanical, that second wave.
It was
like before the third wave feminism of like third wave sex positive that was before Susie Bright. When Susie Bright came, then it was like everything shifted. Susie Bright sort of Susie Bright and like Carol Queen like mixed it up a lot.
Yeah.
And changed everything. And then I think their influence really moved everything along, but it was definitely kind of before then. It was like so dry and vegan.
Yeah, you landed in like the more drab, like just buttoned up, like practical home life lesbian phase and like political vegan.
I know, it was so sad though, because like all of the guys were like had like cobalt and like
so unfair,
and the trans community was very like the trans community was really happening and hopping too, you know, they were having such a great time, because a lot of like there was a lot of stuff going on, and there were a lot of people starting to become more and more political and become more and more active and having like this kind of moment of in San Francisco, there was this thing of like, oh, we're going to actually like become more revolutionary, more politicized.
And,
but the lesbians were still like trying to figure out their sexuality.
Yeah. And, or how to position themselves too. And I mean that politically and like culturally, not necessarily sexually. But that is kind of,
I worked at Stormy Leather, and that sort of changed my own perspective on it. Then I was like, oh, I was hanging out with a different crowd then.
Got it.
Speaking of positioning.
Should we talk about like the topic, which is tribbing specifically? I mean, we've talked a lot about like print media. Would you say like tribbing is something? I mean, well, I guess we should define it first for our listeners. That, I mean, many of them will know, but just to be super academic for a moment, I think we can.
Yeah. Tribbing is a sexual practice in which a person rubs their vulva against their partner's body for sexual stimulation, especially for stimulation of the clitoris.
The term entered English through the French tribade, derived from the Latin tribus, a direct transliteration of Greek meaning to rub. In a parallel development to the Greek source, the French term fricatrice, derived from the Latin fricatrix, colloquial English in the Renaissance often used the term rubster.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm a rubster, so, let's be honest.
Yeah. It can include vulva-to-vulva contact or rubbing the vulva against a partner's thigh, stomach, buttocks, arm, or other body part, excluding the mouth.
A pillow. Does pillow count as like an object?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, going back to the other question, like, tribbing in porn, like, hotly contested. Controversial topic.
Yeah. I mean, why not, though? I mean, why is it controversial? I think it's great.
I think there's a lot of people who assume, who don't understand that there's like, that when they think of tribbing, they think only of scissoring, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's why it's like an issue, because I've in researching this episode, it's like so many, you know, famous queer women were like, scissoring isn't a thing. But I think it's more the idea of like mainstream porn's concept of scissoring.
Yeah, it's rejecting, because I think where the controversy comes from too is a lot of like male gazy lesbian porn, which is just frankly not lesbian porn. It's a lot of times like just straight performers,
right,
like tepidly kissing each other and then performing sex acts that look a lot like straight sex acts of just humping, but not
just
actually
scissoring.
Getting like friction, you know, like just doing crotch to crotch stuff exclusively, but in a way that you're like, you're not even getting the friction there,
right?
You know. And depicting lesbian sex with a very straight vibe, you know? So I think that's where the, like, is scissoring a thing comes from. But I think, like, tribbing is absolutely a thing, as is scissoring, but it's just, like, depicted wrong in a lot of the mainstreamy, like, male-centric porn.
Scissoring is a way to trib.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
For sure.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
What I've learned in my, you know, 2 days of researching for this episode, I'm an expert now.
I think you knew a little bit more about that prior, but I appreciate you owning your new knowledge.
There's something also, I think, the appeal of for people to search for tribbing, other than, like, it's a sex act that they do, but there's also kind of something innocent a little bit about it. Like, when I think about, like, the first time of, like, myself masturbating, it was tribbing, you know, but I just didn't know what it was. It just was like me, like, you know, dry humping a pillow or like rubbing my vulva on like a stuffed animal or like the armchair of like a lazy boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was not one of those kids. I didn't experiment with a pillow because like some of my first masturbation, which was like a shower head, like I went from 0 to 60 and skipped the whole pillow phase. But dry humping was like definitely a thing in my early like partner experiments for sure.
Yeah, there used to be this weird toy that was like, that you would attach to like, remember iPods?
Yeah.
But there was like this weird toy that was like a pink cone and that you could attach to an iPod and then it would like vibrate to like an iPod and then you could, and it was like, it was oddly shaped, but it was for tribbing. And it was something like you could, it was like a vibrator, but it was like a big sort of cone. And it was just oddly shaped. And I remember because I worked for Good Vibrations for a time and I served on their board and I would get these like toys that I would kind of sort of decide whether or not they would make them for sale or decide if they would buy them for sale. Like try to see if we would buy a whole bunch of them to sell them. And it was one of those ones that was like, it was like $75. And it was kind of like, are people going to buy this? Because it's like you Bluetooth it to your phone or your iPod. And then you decide like you would play music through it. It was kind of a speaker, but it was mostly just for vibration. And, but it was just so oddly shaped, but it was just for tribbing.
Yeah.
And I could see how it would make sense, but it was just the word learning curve of it. It was obviously somebody's kink, but it was something like that. It was just like for tripping. I think it would probably work better if it was more like a tube instead of a cone. Mm. Like if it was instead of like this sort of thing, if it was like longer.
You could like ride on it like a Sibian or something.
Yeah. If it was like, I have a motor bunny, which is a short Sibian. It's like a small Sibian. Because the Sibian, it also, the Sibian will like shut off a breaker. If the Sibian, it'll make you go outside
your whole house.
Yeah, you have to flip a switch. You have to go outside.
Reset
to your power
breaker.
Box.
You need someone. You need someone. By like the circuit. You know,
PG&E will have to come out if you turn on your Sibian. It's so annoying. So I have a motor bunny, but the problem with the motor bunny is that it takes so long to set it up. I'm not gonna set it up.
Right.
It's so annoying. So it just collects dust. Mm-hmm. It's really annoying. But if there was a time where I would actually like set it up, if I was more inclined to do it, I would. But it is like a short Sibian.
Yeah.
I thought like I was motivated to do it, I would do it. But what's cool about it is it does have like the silicone like things, like, so it's got like a thing on it that you can attach dildos to it.
Oh.
And you can ride it, like, mm-hmm. you can put like a different attachment onto
on
it. So that
yeah.
that part of it I really like.
Yeah.
And there's I have another a thing that'll like rotate it, and you could have like, you know, different things. But I don't like to ride. I don't like it. I wish that it was something you could recline.
Yeah.
Because I don't like to sit on it.
Yeah.
I'm not a sort of cowgirl or reverse cowgirl rider.
Yeah.
Right. You wish the position was reversed so that you could be more like,
I want to lay down.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to be on my back.
Yeah.
Or on my stomach, at least. It's not.
Right.
It's just not comfortable to sit up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's such a male fantasy kind of. I don't think anybody I'm probably biased, but I don't think anybody likes to be on top. I don't.
I don't. Yeah. No. I'm laying here, okay?
Yeah. It's a very weird thing.
I'm laying here and I've got like one hand on a toy and then the other hand is turning the lights off.
I love a sideways vibe because everybody gets to recline a little bit, but everybody could get some pleasure that way.
Yeah. I love a sideways vibe. Yeah. I love a sideways vibe. I love a back vibe. Mm-hmm. I mean, on top on top laying down.
That'd be nice.
I mean, it's like, I feel like reclined is the only way to really have all of my attention. When I'm upright, I'm really separated from the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Even when I'm like masturbating, like sitting up, I don't know, I like to be able to relax most of my body and like just focus on the pleasure center, so that totally makes sense to me. Like,
if I'm sitting
riding
up,
feels performative and it feels like exercise, which I don't like to
if I'm sitting up, I'm like slowly just hunching more and more and more until I get like fully into like my legs behind my head, because I just, you know, like your body just starts like to convulse and contract, and then I'm a pretzel.
Yeah, I've never felt engaged if I'm sitting up in any sexual situation. It's really just to get into a different position. So the motor bunny is not my favorite thing. I used to have a fucking machine that was like a crank.
Oh,
that was on, that you attached with a vise to the dining room table.
Nice.
But I can't find it, which is really weird, and I moved and then I moved back and then I feel like, and I didn't move the stuff in my house
you feel like somebody like, slipped that out.
I think somebody moved it, and I'm like afraid to ask
who
like,
took my fucking machine. Who took it?
And then I had a Fuxall that somebody made out of I used to go to that, you know, kink.com.
We talked about it a bunch.
The armory. So they gave me a Fuxall that they made out, you know, at fuckingmachines.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They made me, so they had like a Sawzall that they detached, they put a dildo on it.
Oh, right.
Oh, wow.
So it had a Fuxall that was like, and so they gave it to me, but without any kind of a case or anything.
Oh.
And and I live in LA, so they gave it to me in San Francisco, and I had to take it on the plane. To LA, and I didn't have a case. I just had to take it, like, hand carry it and check it. And it was really, like, and I'm sex positive, of course, but it's just embarrassing to take it to Southwest and be like, here.
Is there an extra charge for this? Or
And they were like, okay, I just took it. And I picked it up, and then I just I brought it, and I can't find that either. So I'm like, so there's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's in this house somewhere, but I don't know.
I mean, this is what quarantine is for. This is what quarantine is for, is to find all of your sex machines.
I'll find it somewhere.
Hunt them down. Or they're just still on, like, they're in the overhead compartment of, like, a Southwest flight somewhere.
Somewhere.
Continually circling the country.
Yeah.
I have some fun stats, if anyone wants to hear them.
By all means.
Okay, cool. So women are 664% more likely than men to search for tribbing on Pornhub. The term comes in third place on a list of terms women are more likely to search for than men after eating pussy and pussy licking.
Tight.
In 2003, Julia V. Bailey and her research team published data based on a sample from the United Kingdom of 803 lesbian and bisexual women attending two London lesbian and bisexual health clinics. And from that sample, they reported that 85% of the women engaged in tribidism.
Ooh.
Did we talk about the pronunciation of that, of the word?
We didn't specifically talk about the pronunciation of that word, but tribidism feels right.
Tribidism
is how the internet tried to tell me it was, but that felt excessive. I don't know.
Tribidism. Yeah. Which made me feel good, because I feel like after, when I was researching this episode, so many people were like, scissoring isn't a thing, you know? And now I'm like, I don't know what to believe.
Like, anti-scissoring sort of had a moment, and then multiple surveys went out, like, to queer populations being like, do you do this? Well, I'm like, yeah, it happens. Like, we do
it. But it's not
exclusive. It's just not the way it's depicted in most porn.
I'm going to blame blue as the warmest color. I feel like that was the thing that people got pissed off about, you know?
Ooh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that also, you know, was a problematic shoot for other reasons. So I think there were just, like, a lot of complications swirling about that. And then, you know, naturally and understandably, I think the queer community too was like, maybe some real lesbians like in your casting process.
Yeah. And like something other than just scissoring. Yeah.
I've done it to an extent, but not really in the way that I've seen it, and not in that movie.
Right.
Not in the way in that movie, but I've definitely done it.
Just exclusively for 12 minutes?
Yeah.
I've not done it that long, but I've definitely done it.
Right.
But not in the way that I've seen it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same, but I also feel like, for me, it's like a appetizer to the meal. Right. Like,
yeah.
It can be an arousing way to like engage with someone else's body, but I'm not like doing it as a finisher.
No.
Maybe it's just me too.
Oh,
like,
no, no.
It's hard for me to come just from like someone else's hands. So like a vibe getting involved is super helpful.
Yeah. I do love it.
Oh, like, I need that.
Yeah.
I do.
That's very important.
Love the friction. Like, I am a fan of like grinding on someone's thigh.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
For sure.
Yeah.
But again, not exclusively just doing that for, you know, 45 minutes until hopefully I get close to an orgasm. No way. No way, Jose.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, really quickly, I have a fun little tidbit. Did you guys know that animals trib?
I did know that.
Yes. Animals. Female to female genital sex is not exclusive to humans.
Yeah. Females, I feel like I've seen those videos, and I also follow an Instagram account that's just like lesbian animals, and it's just a lot of like, it's a lot of like animals being cuddly, and like, who knows the genders of the animals, but it's just like otters like hugging, but then occasionally it's like, you know,
bonobos,
animals,
scissoring.
And I'm a fan, so
that's so cute.
It's very sweet. You gotta find some uplifting stuff to follow on the old Instagram, or
it's
it'll beat the shit out of you until there's no reason for living. I say, like, someone who isn't recently queer. Oh, hi.
Lucia. Like, come here, baby.
Speaking of...
Come here, baby.
You know. Animals. Hi, puppy. Should we do the showdown?
Yeah. You want to throw a title at us?
Yeah. My first title is WAP Cardi B Lesbian Hard Tribbing Sex.
Interesting. Is this actually Cardi B? Did you click through?
I clicked through. It's just two women, like, you know, twerking and two WAP.
It's someone grabbing the trend and using that as the underscoring to be like, this is what we're all thinking about when we're watching the music video.
Right. As two bodies rubbing against each other.
Got it. Mm-hmm. All right. I've got a long-awaited doggy-style trib that everyone's been asking for.
I have. How do they know? I've been asking for it.
Yeah. Doggy style trib, though. Like,
I'm confused by that.
I feel like only one person can trib. You know, in that scenario, and you're like,
yeah, like on from the back.
Yeah, like it actually. I don't know who's asking for this because it sounds logistically challenging. Yeah, and I'm looking for something logistically simple.
Next up, I've got I'm hotter than you. Let's trip to sit on Santa's lap.
Whoa,
I know. Accusatory.
Yeah, and that like narrative took a turn. Like first it was about like who's hottest, and then Santa was there. Like where'd Santa come
from? Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy.
I'll throw one more in. Mm-hmm. A little nap turned into a pussy tripping.
A little nap.
Which that one actually sounds really pleasant. I'm like, if that's the way to like wake up from a nap, it sounds fine. It sounds nice.
What a lovely afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay, next up, I've got tripping with a friend. She made my pussy fart.
Oh.
That's interesting because like I wouldn't think that tripping would cause a pussy fart.
Yeah.
Like, pussy farts, in my experience, happen when there's something entering the pussy.
Inserted, yeah.
Yeah, it's the movement of air. It's the forcing out of air.
I mean, who knows?
But maybe she just needed a pussy fart. Like, she had some air in there from before, and it just happened.
And it was just a good friend. Just a good friend helping you out.
Yeah. Listen, pussy farts happen.
Releasing some gas, some air.
Again, very sweet. The trib of a lifetime.
Oh, wow. I'm gonna watch that actually because I gotta know.
A lot of creativity on my end, just a lot of really sweet titles, you know. Less
what makes it the trip of a lifetime.
They know their audience. It's pretty like a lot of these are a little more tender than some of what we stumble across.
Exactly. The algorithm knows you too well. I'm getting romance vibes, which I'm into. The trip of a lifetime. Oh, I've got one more for you.
Give it to me.
Some really hot lesbian tripping going on here. Some really hot lesbian tripping going on here. It's like something you shout to the back of the crowd. Hey!
Yeah.
Like, we got some really hot stuff going on right here. You better get in.
Yeah.
Take a
look.
There's
an onlooker who needed to let us know. That's good of him. Tripping town crier.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. All right, let's take a little break. We'll be right back.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
And we're back from a sexy little break. What did everybody
gentle
do?
Gentle break.
With all that time in your hands. You probably listened to an ad. Fingers crossed, anyways. So the first video we're going to talk about is equestrian lesbians making out and dry humping on a couch, because where else would they be? This is from TaylorRaz.com. I know nothing else about that website. We found it on Pornhub.
Yeah, I couldn't find performers for this. Could you?
No, I couldn't.
No surprises there. I feel like these chicks did like this video and the other equestrian videos and ran away.
Yeah.
The only thing that feels like a lie about the title of this video is everything.
Everything. Like, except for the fact that it's a couch.
Yeah. There is a couch.
There is a couch. And if you thought it was a vinyl couch, you were right.
Yes. I don't believe that these are lesbians.
No.
I don't believe that these are women who ride horses. Call me crazy.
Those pants were so white. I mean, they were so
brand
white
new.
That they couldn't have.
Yes,
they couldn't have been riding right before that.
They didn't just come from a ride, as the dialogue would have us believe.
Right.
Because you can't keep white riding pants that white.
No.
It just isn't a thing.
And it felt very 2011, because I remember in 2011, I did go through a very, it was very 2011, very specific. Mm-hmm. I went through this weird phase where I have to have everything riding. And I actually went to the LA Stables and I bought boots and pants. And I was going to buy a jacket. And then I was like, I can't buy a jacket. That's too much.
Yeah. That'd be simply too much.
That's too much.
Yeah.
That's just that. Then that's like straight up Dynasty. I can't go that far. And I'm like, who am I, Stephanie Beecham? That's too much. And but then I had the boots. The lady there made me buy the boots so tight. She's like, you have to buy them really tight because they're gonna stretch.
Oh.
And I bought them so tight that I could feel my pulse.
Oh God.
In
oh my God.
Calves.
No.
And it started to give me anxiety.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you ever break them in?
I did finally.
Okay.
But it was like so painful.
Ugh.
Like it would just took a long time to like break them in. But they have to be, I guess that shoe, I don't know, they had to be that tight or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess they have to be that tight when they ride them, because they have to be that tight when you have them on when you're riding, because they have to grip the horse and I don't really know. I wasn't riding.
Yeah, it was just the accessorizing. Yeah.
Did you also wear plaid knee-high socks underneath your riding boots?
Or socks I didn't like, and I was like, I really didn't like them, and I wished at least they would switch them, because they were just so color, like hers was white and the other was, I'm like, I wish they would just switch the socks.
Yeah.
They were just so color matchy-matchy that it freaked me out.
Yeah. Also, like, is that a thing? Like, do horse girls wear that?
Yeah. I don't think so.
I don't know. I wish they would put the boots back on. I'm like, the boots were cool.
Right, yeah.
I'm like, that's the reason to watch the video is the boots.
Is the boots.
Yeah. The Argyle socks felt like they were like, well, what do we do when they take the boots off? Maybe matching socks? But I was like, I don't feel like, I don't buy those socks.
No.
They felt really like of a different world. But I write us and let us know, listeners, are Argyle socks a requirement for horse girls?
No. the socks you have to wear with a skirt, like a short skirt.
Yeah.
That's a different fetish. You're mixing fetishes.
You're right. You're
That's
exactly
how I
right.
felt. That's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
Like you need a plaid skirt and a Fair Isle sweater.
Yeah.
Don't fucking you know, you're mixing metaphors.
Victoria and Elizabeth. That's what I feel like their names are. They look like their names are Victoria and Elizabeth.
You need clogs with those socks, and that's final.
Uh-huh. That's all I have to say about that.
What are those called? Like the patent leather, like buckle top shoes?
Mary Jane.
Like, little. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or a Mary
Jane. Yeah, or penny loafers.
Anything
or,
else.
Or a fry boot or something like, you know, I'm really adamant about it. Like, but I like a boot. I love an equestrian boot. I love an equestrian look.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I was excited to click on the video, but then I was really disappointed when they took the boots off, and I was really like, you know, it's like, I think I am a fetishist in a lot of ways, and So, you know, I do love an equestrian moment, and I do love an equestrian look, and I was just really offended that they took the boots off. Yes. And then my dog was really excited by the kissing sound.
Yeah.
There was a smooching.
I'm glad to hear this because my dog does that in real life. Like, if I kiss someone, she's like, what are we doing? What snacks are we having? And it's frankly a problem.
It was a weird kissing. It wasn't even like, it was just, there was no tongue. There was nothing.
They're kissing without tongue. Yeah. That's why I was like, this isn't even making out. Like, that part's
so
even a lie.
I was so concerned for the blonde girl.
Yeah.
She didn't want to touch the other girl. I don't think she really knew what she was getting herself into. The way she like touched the other girl's boob was so weird. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I just was like, she doesn't want to be here and she's not enjoying this.
Her body always looked awkwardly positioned where she was like constantly like sort of leaning away or like almost you could just tell from her body language that she was trying to distance her body from the other girl while also like making out with her and touching her boob. And I was like, this doesn't bode well. Like, this doesn't look
well. That's what I think what the sound was about, was she was trying to cut off the kissing.
She was like, you're not getting in my mouth.
She was just trying to like cut it off.
I do appreciate that at least the brunette chose to trib on a human instead of a horse. You know, this could have easily gone wrong. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But again, it didn't look like she was really getting friction. Like, she was doing sort of the motion of riding a horse or like sort of performative humping where you're like, look how I can isolate my hips from my the rest of my torso. But like, it didn't look like she was getting like strong contact or was like close enough.
Well, isn't the whole point of those pants is that they have like padding and they protect you? Like, they can't be like conducive to getting off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you can move inside of them somehow or like trip against the pants against a person, but it sounds complicated. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking
it. I think so,
it.
Because they have a suede interior, so that there's a kind of fetishy element of the inside of the pants. I mean, I think that's why I like them, is that the crotch and the ass part is like suede.
Mm. Mm. Ooh.
So that's the thing about like equestrian pants, is that the business end, which is like the ass part and the crotch part, is all suede lined.
Ooh. Yeah.
So you have this sort of padding that's cushioned, but it's also like, it's fetishy in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then they did this weird thing where they both got up on their knees and started like kissing, and they were just sort of like bobbing up and down at the end on their knees. And I was like, what's happening here? Like, now they're just face to face, just sort of like bobbing up and down.
Yeah. Reminiscent of like horseback riding, but without any of the sexuality, like they managed to remove it.
Yeah. In like slow motion, you know?
I was very quickly bored by this video.
Absolutely.
Like, they had the early dialogue of like, thought you looked really nice on your horse. Did you think I looked good on my horse? And then
the blonde girl refuses to speak.
And then they're just like awkward making out and awkward dry humping. And that's all we get.
Well, they did have a lot of that sort of like early aughts filigree on the shirt. Like the printing, it was like really like showing like the Victoriana of the filigree of the 2011 and 2012.
Yes. You're giving so much credit to this video and what's... Well, I mean, frankly, this video is like failing at something that like probably could have knocked it out of the park for you. Like if they had gotten the details of the accessories and the costumes and the like boots and the riding pants right, I'm assuming you probably would have been really into this. Is that right, Margaret?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, if it had like, you know, I could have been really, if they had left the boots on and if they'd been into it.
Yeah.
I think, or even if they kept, if they took the boots off, it's fine. If they'd been into it, it would have been great. Mm-hmm. But they just didn't enjoy themselves, which I think is like, that's all it is. It's like, if they're enjoying themselves, that's what that's what I watch it for.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I think we all do. Yeah, I think we're always looking for believable female pleasure, and it's harder than you think to find. But
yeah. For sure.
And then they hear someone coming and then they're like, quick. And then they put their boots back on, which I was like, walk me through the reasoning here. Why do we need the boots back on?
We mustn't remove our boots, for that's how they steal our souls.
Yeah. Literally. Yeah. What a weird video. Yeah, this was not doing anything for me.
Yeah, I don't have anything else good to say about this. Any last thoughts on this one?
No.
I thought that the couch was going to make more fart sounds.
I did too.
Also a disappointment.
The smooching just really overpowered everything.
It was very loud, yeah.
Ugh. Shall we move on? Let's move on to the other vid.
Yeah, let's talk about Crash Pad series. Mm-hmm. That old chestnut, that old reliable steed.
I love the theme song for Crash Pad. I love it.
That's funny. I've like never given it much thought, but now that you mention it, I guess I'm on board.
It feels like grungy, you know, like it feels very like a particular time and place. And it's like,
it does. Like it does grungy, bring us back like, to like the heyday of Crash Pad itself, yeah, for
right,
sure.
Right.
It's very San Francisco. Yes. It's very like San Francisco women produced porn. I found out about that series from Violet Blue.
Oh yeah.
Who loves that. She knows all of, them. And, you know, it's, I mean, I actually really love them, and they always use, that old reliable, the Hitachi magic wand.
Always. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's, which is my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. There's two of them in this, which I was like, oh, interesting. We can all get involved, which is great. Like, that's the first thing they
have
out.
The rechargeables. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Which is the best.
Mm-hmm. I also love that sometimes, like particularly in this episode with Olivia Woods and Vivi Marie, there wasn't necessarily like a storyline. Like sometimes it's like, oh, we just met each other and now we're in this apartment. But this was just like they just happened to be hanging out. And she was like, I'm getting into toys. Like, let's play with some of these toys.
Yeah. Wait, can I read the description of this?
Because
choice. Olivia Woods seems surprised by Vivi Marie's new hobby of collecting sex stuff, but is more than compliant when Vivi tells them to take off their clothes and try out a magic wand. But Vivi's got more in store, a double-ended delight that sees Olivia riding high and showing off bright pink handprints. Fans of sex acts named after office supplies rejoice. These two scissor harder than a coupon collector on Sunday.
Oh my God. And we get a lot of clit stimulation in this, and that's what I'm looking for in a porn. I gotta say it. That's what I'm looking for.
I could have done with more tribbing. Like, I did. Yes. It's a long porn. It's, like, basically, like, half an hour, which is sort of the max that we subject ourselves to here on Girls on Porn. Yeah. And I loved it, like, when we got to it, but it was basically, like, in the last 3 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And I, like I said, personal preference, think of tribbing as, like, an appetizer to the meal.
Yeah.
That we, like, get into sooner, where this, like, happened much closer to the end, and there was very little of it, that I was like, oh, interesting for, like, featuring it in the description, like, could have done with more. But I agree that, like, you know, this was hard scissoring when we actually got to it.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was so much happening. Like, it was very dynamic, and that's why I love Crash Pad. And queer porn in general. I mean, there's just like the ingenuity, you know, all the like the different positions. Like, I feel like I get so bored in straight porn because it's like a blowjob and then penetrative sex and then a cum shot, you know?
Yeah, very, very standard through line. This also has what I love in Crash Pad too, is it always feels like playful. Like they giggle and like acknowledge when awkward things happen and there's a lot of communication, you know, like a lot of like, oh, do you like that? Like, what about this? Like, not overly dialogued, but just feels like a real explorative sex session.
Yeah.
Feels like a easy thing to ask for, but Crash Pad consistently does it and not everybody else does. Like, I believe
they
usually
always
are
have really
sex.
Big windows too. Like the Crash Pad series always have like really nice apartments.
Yeah.
Like huge windows.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, this one's kind of dimly lit, which is interesting, too. Like, it feels sort of, like, moody, and something about that makes it feel really 90s to me. Like, you know?
We get some spanking. We get tickling.
Mm-hmm.
There's a double-ended dildo that gets brought out.
Mm-hmm.
See, I never liked the double-ended dildo. To me, it's kind of like I've never used them successfully. Mm. They're kind of
logistically challenging.
They're logistically challenging. They're never satisfying. Maybe for one person it's satisfying, but it's like it's never. I mean, I think One person kind of gets it and the other one is sort of just like wielding it. It's like water weenie or something. It's always like weird and slippery and like not quite there and
hard to wrangle.
It's hard to wrangle and it's almost but never. To me, that's like the male fantasy is that this should work, but it doesn't.
There was a little interesting. There was a little bit of that vibe in this where like the double ended dildo and then the tribbing came closer to the end, and it was like I'm gonna mix them up, but a. Nope, Vivi, I think, is on her back, and then Olivia Woods gets on top and is, like, sort of riding the dildo, and I was like, yeah, I don't know, like, let's pull those wands out again. Like, I just was like, that's where I would take this at the end. And I do, there was some fun stuff where I think Olivia was close to coming, and Vivi was like, not yet, which is fun.
Yeah.
But when we get to the end, I was like, let's see that sustained long-ass orgasm that you can get with a wand. Or, and it, there was a little bit of that where she was like, Vivi was like teasing at the end and kind of playing with Olivia's vulva and like sort of like, we could tell that she had come and it had some of that like, whoa, sensation. I agree that like a double-ended dildo is a challenging thing and feels a little bit male-gazy. But if you're into it, you're into it. I just personally don't quite get it.
Yeah,
personally, I've never been able to like get into it, and I've just never I've never seen the appeal, and so I just never liked them. But I mean, maybe somebody likes it. I've just never seen it work.
Yeah,
in my experience, I've never seen it work with anybody else. So I don't know.
Yeah. I'd much rather watch like the 69 with the magic wands.
That
was hot.
I mean, magic wands are like the most successful thing. I mean, they're always. I don't think that there's ever been a more successful dildo, like, or not dildo, vibrator, but and any even other iterations of vibrators that are even the copies don't come close. For some reason, the vibration patterns and the way that they're constructed, they're just perfect.
Yeah, incredible.
Only other closing detail, I loved Vivi's bra. It was, it sort of felt like retro, but like it was sort of like a little mini tank top, but it had like a vintage feel to it in a certain way. And you know, I dig that. So yeah, that was fun.
I loved this video.
Yeah.
It was definitely,
it was hot. The arc of it, like I said, was sort of weird to me, but it still had so many hot elements that I was here for it.
I left feeling inspired. So
Yeah.
Which is what more can you ask for in a porn?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Margaret Cho. What a fucking honor to have you on this. I feel like you're a legend in this space. It's meant so much to have you on and have you talk about like your fucking people that paved the way for you. And it's so cool to know like the environment you grew up in. It sounds really, really helpful. And progress.
Thank you. Well, this is really inspiring.
Oh, awesome. Glad.
Thank you.
We're trying to carry the torch forward as best we can.
Yeah.
And just
I love it.
Point more people to better porn.
Yes.
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
We need it. We need you. Thank you.
Yeah. We're trying.
Do you want to plug anything before we go?
You can find me on all platforms at Margaret Cho and on Instagram at Margaret_Cho. And I'm around. I'll be back on tour when the pandemic is over. So find me.
Can't wait. Yeah.
And check out the Margaret Cho podcast, which conveniently comes out on Tuesdays.
That's right.
Before we come out on Wednesdays. And then I think recently we found out Joel Kim Boosters comes out on Thursdays. We're filling up your week is what we're telling you.
Yes. Yay.
With great podcasts.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening to Girls on Porn. You can find us on Instagram at Girls on Pern, that's porn without the O, on Twitter at GOP the Podcast, and at our website, girlsonporn.com.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show if you haven't already.
And if you give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, drop your Insta handle and we'll tag you and express our abundant gratitude.
This has been Girls on Porn, the only GOP that's actually good.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.